Hi, my name is Spencer Keeble. I am a Master of Public Health student at the University at Albany School of Public Health, and I have a bachelor's degree in medicinal chemistry from Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. I've created this radio segment series titled Fluoridation Nation because I believe that we should all be more informed about the addition of fluoride to municipal drinking water because it is a controversial topic as it directly impacts the health of most U.S. citizens. The story is nationally relevant as the U.S. EPA has been sued on the grounds that fluoride poses a risk to the developing brains of fetuses and infants. The story is also locally relevant as the city of Albany does not fluoridate its drinking water while the cities of Troy and Schenectady do. Part 1 of Fluoridation Nation begins with clips from a webinar for medical and dental professionals about patient engagement about fluoride and fluoridation. The webinar was originally presented in 2018 by Professor of Dental Hygiene Meg Atwood and Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Albany Medical College, Dr. Melinda Clark.
Is optimally fluoridated water at 0.7 part per million. So again, we use it, we drink it, it may be ingested, there's intention for ingestion. Drinking and utilization of fluoridated water maintains a steady low exposure to the teeth throughout the day. Fluoride is a mineral that exists naturally in public water supplies and in rivers, lakes, groundwater, and even in the oceans. But usually the naturally occurring level is too low to prevent tooth decay. So if we look at the epidemiology, in the early 1900s, people living in communities with higher levels of fluoride, which were occurring naturally in their wells, were found to have less tooth decay, but some had teeth that, and some it affected the appearance of the teeth. This led researchers to find an optimal level of fluoride where teeth were resistant to decay and the appearance of the teeth was not affected by tooth modeling, which we now call fluorosis. At that time, the optimal level was determined to be 1.0 parts per million fluoride. Research in the mid-1900s followed. Would adding fluoride to community water supplies to the optimal level have the same caries reduction effect? There were large-scale clinical trials, including those in Newburgh and Kingston, New York, and in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Muskegon, Illinois, and they showed a dramatic reduction in decay in children drinking this artificially fluoridated water. This research has led to our understanding of water fluoridation as a process of adjusting the natural fluoride to meet the optimal level known to prevent tooth decay, and also to research and products for fluoride for prevention that we know of now. I'll mention that later a range of 0.7 to 1.2 part per million was recommended, which was based on geography and air temperature. Grand Rapids was the first city to start fluoridating its water supply. Before fluoridation, the average 15-year-old living in Grand Rapids had 13 decayed, missing, or filled teeth. We refer to this as DMS. Now, let's look at this graph. In comparison, the blue line shows a dramatic reduction in decay seen a decade later after fluoridation was initiated. The decay rate dropped by roughly 50%. Among all fluoride prevention and control strategies, community water fluoridation has been identified as the most cost-effective method of delivering fluoride to all members of the community, regardless of age, education, and income. It's been heralded by the CDC, and we recently celebrated over 70 years of water fluoridation in the United States. I think that helps to point to its safety. It's estimated that every dollar spent on water fluoridation saves $38 in cost for dental treatment, and the lifetime cost for water fluoridation per person is less than the cost of one filling. So it's really very effective and a social justice equalizer. In 2015, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services recommended a reduction in the optimal level of water fluoridation from a range of 0.7 to 1.2 parts per million to a universal target of 0.7 part per million. Keep in mind now that we have so many other sources of fluoride in addition to fluoride in our drinking water. As I said, there are many sources of fluoride exposure today. Those were not available at the time of the original studies. Thus, the goal of reducing the target level to 0.7 parts per million is to maintain optimal caries prevention while at the same time reducing the risk of tooth fluorosis. And this is an important information to consider when talking about water fluoridation to our patients and others. What's the impact of water fluoridation? To appreciate that, we can look at levels of dental disease in children who live in non-fluoridated communities across our country. You see from these three recent studies that children living in non-fluoridated communities have roughly 33% more decayed, missing, or filled teeth, and they need more root canals to prevent tooth loss due to decay, and that the lack of water fluoridation is seen as a major risk factor for tooth decay in teens. This recent study from Britain examined hospital admission rates for tooth extractions, and the admission rates were highest in non-fluoridated communities. Here we see that water fluoridation is supported by numerous reputable organizations representing the medical and dental professions, government, and nonprofits in the U.S. and internationally. It's quite an impressive list. You may want to post this in your operatories and offices.
And as this UAlbany School of Public Health webinar cited recent studies on the dental health impact of fluoridation, I'll cut over to a webinar done by Fluoride Action Network, where their research director, Chris Neurath, discusses the neurotoxicity of fluoride.
So the National Toxicology Program, which is the U.S. government's main agency for studying toxic chemicals, and is probably considered the premier government agency in the world for this, recently reviewed and did a systematic review of all the evidence on fluoride's neurotoxicity. And they issued a draft report in November, which concludes fluoride is presumed to be a cognitive neurodevelopmental hazard to humans. And that conclusion is based on a consistent pattern of findings in human studies, all different types of studies done in different places by different researchers. And the main outcome of most of the studies was decreased IQ, but also other cognitive impairments or behavioral problems. So this report is important because it's looked at the totality of the evidence. And NTP agreed to study neurotoxicity, developmental neurotoxicity, because it is becoming increasingly aware that of all the different types of toxicity, often infants, the fetus, are more susceptible, and especially their brains, developing brains, are more susceptible than, say, cancer or causing liver problems or other types of problems that toxins can cause. But often lower doses are now being found to cause neurotoxicity, developmental neurotoxicity.
Chris then describes why fetal and infant brains are more susceptible to harm during development.
Now, the fetal and infant brain is much more susceptible than the adult brain to permanent harm from neurotoxic chemicals. It's because of this complexity, and the timing offers many opportunities for disruption. But another reason is there's something called the blood-brain barrier, which is not well developed during the fetal period, and not even for the first 6 months of life. Now, this doesn't exist in other parts of the body, other tissues, but for the brain, it blocks the ability of many toxic chemicals to get into the brain. But again, during this developmental, early developmental period, it's not there at all, or it's not well developed. And the other reason early brain development is so susceptible is because things are happening so quickly, and the timing is very important. If they're delayed, that can cause permanent harm. So literally, on a day-to-day basis, different things are happening, and if something is slowed down or disrupted, even just for a day, it can cause permanent harm.